And welcome to the second season of Seniors in the Building. We are four friends exploring aspects of aging together. Our conversations run the gamut from humorous to serious to maybe outrageous. We hope to hear from new voices this year as we invite guests into our conversations. Thanks for being with us. Hi, welcome to Seniors in the Building. I'm Signe.
I'm Jack.
I'm Elaine.
And I'm Rick.
Hello, listeners. At the beginning of season two, we mentioned bringing a few guest presenters into our podcast conversations on aging. Today, we'd like to welcome Nancy Phillips. Nancy is a retired nurse, writer, and currently one of the leaders in the Growing in Wisdom program on spirituality and aging. Over the episodes of Seniors in the Building, we've talked about ways we personally address the aging process and select a variety of topics to bring to our conversation. While we have never intimated a perfect or personal program for each of us, we do talk generally about aging. Nancy brings a particular emphasis on spirituality and the aging process that has worked for her and others, and we've invited her to share her wisdom gained through her personal experiences in this program. So welcome, Nancy, to our conversation today. You could probably say hello and have your voice recognized by our group.
Thank you, Elaine, and it's good to be here. Thank you for engaging in this conversation, because I think it is really important to talk about what we're experiencing as we age and to have a place where we can kind of muse and think about what does this mean and what this stage of life is all about. So thank you. Thanks for the invitation today.
So I guess maybe the first thing we thought we'd ask you is what motivated you to research or learn more about the spirituality of aging, and kind of how is this personal to you? And maybe tell us a little bit about your research and what it's all about.
Okay, thanks. I guess I would have to say that my exploration of spirituality of aging was kind of not forced upon me, but circumstances happened that kind of headed me in that direction. So I'll tell you a little bit of my personal story, because I think personal stories are where we all begin. I'm married to an Anglican bishop, and we moved to Winnipeg in 2000, and dragged our kids out of the middle of high school, and they weren't happy about moving, and landed here in Winnipeg. And I worked full-time and followed my husband around to various parishes all over southern Manitoba and northern Ontario. And so by the time I got into my early 60s, I was tired. I was exhausted, and I thought, you know, I think I'd like to retire early. So at 61 and a half, I retired. And in the first, and that was so I could rest, so I could recover from such a busy life and let my body catch up with my soul. And so what happened in that first year and a half of retirement was that my husband was diagnosed with cancer, had surgery, and then his mom died, and then he developed sepsis and almost died, and then my dad died, and then he did radiation treatment. Oh, and I missed in there, just 10 days after, he developed sepsis just 10 days after our son and daughter-in-law had twins, and they already had a 4-year-old and a 5-year-old, and they gave birth to twins. So their hands were full, and they needed support. My dad died, and my mom died, and so all of that was just kind of left me sort of flattened. It was like, this is not what I imagined retirement was going to be like. Mm-hmm. It wasn't blissful. It wasn't a ride into the sunset. So that got me. I happened to notice on the internet one day this program that was offered in San Antonio, Texas, at the Oblate School of Theology, which is a Roman Catholic university down there, called Forest Dwelling. And I looked at the program, and it was for aging people who wanted to, you know, kind of make sense of their lives and find a new spirituality for your aging years. And I thought, I need that. Mm-hmm. I don't care how much it costs, I need that. Mm-hmm. And so I did 2 years. I had to go down to San Antonio twice a year for 1 week each time, and then the rest of it was all on Zoom. And that was my first introduction to Zoom. And it was just such a wonderful experience to be engaged with other people who are going through a lot of the same kinds of circumstances and thinking and exploring. And it was just a wonderful foundation to build on. And so when I finished those two years, I had an opportunity to develop a Canadian sister program to that called Growing in Wisdom, which has now run for 4 years.
Oh, wow.
So, we've had two cohorts done, so.
And they go through for 2 years, right?
It's a two-year program.
The same model that you had in the States.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, your story sounds crazy. Crazy would be the language. How many times can you have loss? How many times can you be overwhelmed? How many times is it that we can't just retire and go off into the sunset, eh?
You know, it's bizarre how stuff like that happens. Because we retired and then you got so sick, Jack, and then, you know, you just don't know what's going to happen when you retire. It's never quite what you think it's going to be.
Yeah.
Right.
Yes. And in all of that, I mean, that's the part of aging, but all of that happens at a time when you're making a transition from being known for what you do to being known for who you are. So, and particularly in my case, I worked as a registered nurse. Right. So when you retire, you lose that title. You are no longer a registered anything. So
that's right.
So your whole identity and, you know, everything that you've done and worked on for your whole life up till that point is suddenly gone. It's changed. And so it's not easy to find your way through those early days of figuring out just who am I without my career trappings.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. I struggle with that too.
So this program then helped you in what specific ways? Like in terms of finding yourself?
Well, there are four, I mean, I think developing a notion or a sense of spirituality is important as we age. Because I think as we age, our bodies start to break down. So we all know that. We have more illnesses, more things go wrong. And so the spirit part of us, our soul part, is the part of us that can strengthen. And so it's good to provide ourselves with opportunities to strengthen that part of ourselves. And I think I learned four key things out of these two programs. The first is that it's really helpful as we age to have a meditation practice of some sort. And meditation is important because it helps us come to terms with what is, to really, to be able to let go of what we assume, what we think, and just kind of find ourselves in a space where we're not in control and we come to terms with what is. And the second thing is that we need to learn how to engage with our aging bodies with compassion. You know, it's as parts start to go, we get frustrated, we get angry, you know, we just want everything to work the way it always has. And so, but our body served us for a long time. So learning how to be present to that and what that means for us and how we can be gentle with ourselves in terms of coping with those changes to our body, I think is really important. And then, you know, I've talked with a lot of seniors who are going through this journey over the years, and they all say the same thing. We really need to be able to talk about what it's going to be like to die. It's going to happen to every single one of us. So it's a reality of our lives that they're going to end at some point. And we need to be able to have conversations with that. You know, who do you go to? You know, who wants to sit and talk with you about what it's going to be like to die, what that means for you, what your preferences are going to be, what you, you know, what your approach to it is going to be, what kinds of things do we need to do, to put in place, to finish up, to tidy up before we get to that point in our lives. And so the people who take our programs are really value that, that opportunity to kind of explore death and dying in depth. It sounds kind of morbid, but it's, but you know, we have a whole week where we focus on that topic alone, and people come to the end of it and they say, oh, this was the best week. And I think, wait, we just talked about death and dying all week. But, you know, that's that. It's because people need that opportunity to talk about that topic in a place where it's acceptable to do that.
Yeah, actually, we've talked about it with our lawyer. He was wonderful in asking us questions about what we would like done in certain situations.
Yeah. I think there are. I've heard about some lawyers that are really good out there at really prompting you with the right kinds of questions and
well, he was
getting
retired.
You thinking about it.
He was retired, and this was his sort of retirement
niche.
Yes, this is exactly what he did. That's all he did. So. Yeah.
So we lucked out in that regard.
Yeah. That's a good find.
It's helpful. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you said three things.
The fourth thing is the opportunity to become a blessing elder. So you've lived your whole life, you've had all kinds of experiences and opportunities. So now to be able to take that and turn it around and give back in the final days of your life. So, you know, I've heard people say that the love that a grandparent has for a grandchild is the purest kind of love. Mm-hmm. And that's because we're in that space of being a blessing elder and wanting to bless our grandchildren. And it probably is the reason why lots of seniors become involved in volunteer work, because they want to give back to their community and they want to, bless other people in some way. So when you have lived a long and a rich life, you have that opportunity to go back and bless. And so that process of becoming a blessing elder, sort of gathering up all the wisdom and knowledge that you have and finding a way of sharing that with people around you is part of that process of becoming a blessing elder.
Yeah.
I feel like that's kind of what our podcast is in some ways.
Yes.
I was just going to ask, I think that's one of the challenges, and we've talked about that in previous podcasts, in our society, elders are often seen as some non-productive to be pushed to the side. So, and you've shared a bit about opportunities to be a blessing elder, but it can be a real challenge to be able to sort of impart wisdom or that blessing, because often many elderly people I've encountered, and over the years, and now I am myself, you don't feel like you're given the opportunity. Do you want to say more about that?
Yeah. Well, and I think as we age too, and our bodies start to break down, there becomes a limit to the number of things that we can do as blessing elders. And I always remember Dawn's mom, who had vascular dementia, which affects her brain was clear, but her body started to give out. She was unable to move her arms and legs. And she used to say, you know, there's not much I can do for my church anymore. But she said, they put me on the prayer list and I can pray for people. So she would sit in her wheelchair and she would pray for people in her parish. So, that's a reality. It's, to finding those opportunities to bless sometimes is difficult, or feeling that you have, you know, something to give can be a problem too. So, and sometimes you'll hear stories about people who have been deeply depressed as they age and then find some other person or some animal to care for, and it brings them out of that depression because they have that opportunity to
be. Yeah. My mother-in-law, Rick's mother, went to a senior's home at the age of 64. She had, broken her leg at her home in Northwest BC, and she just found she was so isolated, trying to recover at home. And even though the family was coming every day and home care was coming in and everything, she felt so isolated. And so she just decided enough is enough, And she called us up and said, can you find me a senior's home? And we were kind of flabbergasted at first, you know, because we thought, well, man, she's only 64 years old. But then we started looking around and we found mm-hmm. this place in Victoria for her. She ended up living there for 31 years.
Wow.
And until she was 82, she was a constant volunteer. She would take people to their, like walk them down to the clinic and on the bottom of the hill. And uh-huh. so she took people to appointments. She went grocery shopping for them. She cared for them if they needed, you know, have to have do exercises after a surgery or whatever. She did amazing things. And it was really to the point where we were saying at 82, we said, I think, Mom, you need to take a break from doing this kind of stuff, right? But, you know, after she died, people came to us at the funeral and said, did you know that my mother, your mother, took care of my mother? And they would name all the things that she had done. And I just, it really, I felt in awe of her at that time, you know, thinking about her legacy and understanding that she, you know, she was an immigrant. She didn't have always great English, and there were other things that always seemed to be a strike against her. And yet this thing was something she could give.
She came alive there.
She came alive.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, and it was just beautiful. And so when you talk about blessing, that really sort of puts a visual picture to the kind of work that she was doing, right? Yes, it doesn't always have to be about our mind to be sharing brilliant wisdom that comes out, but it can be, but, you know, it's just kind of a sense of both. So.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a great story. I love that. Yeah.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Just...
And I think you do find that quite often when people move into assisted living or nursing home. Their health improves for a period of time because mm-hmm. they have the social contact, they have the stimulation. Mm-hmm. You know, all of those things are important. And if you're living alone...
As well as the care that they...
And the care, correct, supportive
proper
care.
Proper nutrition. And,
I think the other piece is that it's a bit of a, it's a blessing to the families, too, who don't live there, right? They know mom's getting, like we did, we knew mom was being taken care of, and that every day if she didn't turn this little tag over on her door, that they would know they had to go in and check on her, right? Mm-hmm. And so we didn't have to have this anxiety from a distance, too. And I realize some people are really against, you know, seniors' homes and everything, but when you want to live far from your family, it often is one of the safest places to be, you know, or at least that's been my experience.
So it sounds like as we get older, being in community is very important. Like one of the things we miss is not going to church anymore. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't miss it in the sense that I would do it. But
miss the community.
But there was a community for us there. Yeah. And I've thought of, anyway, what I was thinking is this forest dwelling program down in San Antonio. One of the ways that I get consolation in my aging decrepitude at times is being in nature. Does forest dwelling, is that metaphorical or does it actually mean there's a forest in San Antonio that you were in?
That's a good question.
There were a couple of nice oak trees on campus.
That's a good question. We do like a nice oak tree.
So and it's kind of an interesting name, forest dwelling, for a seniors program. But where it comes from, one of the problems we face is that we, in North America, we don't have a good anthropology of aging. We don't have good models to draw from. Because in North America, most people didn't, you know, until the last, 30 years, people didn't live well into their 80s or 90s. I mean, that was really uncommon and unusual. So we didn't have to worry about what happened to the folks after you hit 65 because you weren't around that long. So in the Hindu religion, they have something called the four ashramas, or stages of life. And the first ashrama is being a student. So you know, a young child going to school, learning. And learning is their key activity, the most important thing. And then you become a householder. And so you get married and you raise a family and you have a career and you contribute to society. And that's key in that stage. And then you become, when you get to the kind of grandparent stage, then you become a forest dweller. So you withdraw from, it's kind of like retirement, you withdraw from the forest, from the busyness of life, and sit amongst the council of elders in the forest. And so that's where that term forest dwelling comes from. And then the final stage after that is called a sannyasin, or a holy old fool, which doesn't sound very nice. But, you know, when you hear the description of that, it kind of sounds like going to a nursing home. So the sannyasin would wander the streets and beg for food, and they would give up their home and not have any belongings anymore. And yeah, I think that kind of sounds like a nursing home.
So it's not borrowed from Japanese culture then.
So it's not, but
we do teach
forest bathing as a form of meditation. And forest bathing can be, you don't have to take off your clothes, you know, you don't have to get nude with the trees. It's not as kinky as it sounds. But spending time amongst trees is known to have some beneficial health effects. It's very calming. And in fact, we had my brother-in-law teach that class, who has done a lot of work with forestry in BC and has been a mental health a counselor as well. And he talks about the ion exchange between the trees and your body. And I forget whether I think the trees emit positive ions or negative ions, and we give off positive. And so there's some science behind why it's beneficial.
Oh, interesting.
So the Japanese, of course, have known this for, centuries, that it's beneficial. And I suppose we've known that when we plan cities and we put a little chunk of park green space with some trees in the middle of a subdivision.
Mm-hmm.
You know, same principle. It's good for our health. It's beneficial.
Yeah.
It's probably why I really enjoy going to the Leaf in Winnipeg, which is an indoor arboretum.
Yeah.
And just sitting in January or February and feeling this ambiance of tropical air and flora.
Yeah.
It's wonderful.
And apparently that ion exchange happens with moving water, like waterfalls.
Mm-hmm.
So they have a waterfall there too. Yeah. If you sit by that waterfall, it's good for your mental health.
Right. So where do you think we are at? Do you think we are in the forest dwellers stage of our life, Jack? As I was thinking about that, you know, I don't really want to be wandering the streets trying to get, but,
well,
you know.
These ashramas, what I know about it is that it's very sexist. Historically, it was men who did it.
Okay.
And women, I don't know what they did in their retirement, wandered around the streets, which we've experienced in poverty.
Exactly. Okay.
Anyway, so
we could change that, couldn't
we? Could
we
change
have forest that. Dwelling groups.
But also in Canada, with our northern climate, it can be done in the winter. I've had a sense of serenity in a winter context, but that's when I was more able and more insulated. Now I'm not sure about winter. But anyway, I think it connects you to something broader and deeper than who you are.
Yes.
To life force, let's say, or something like that.
Yeah, that's very true, I think. And how they came to be using a Hindu concept in a Roman Catholic university is the whole program, Forest Dwelling, kind of began with a conversation between a woman by the name of Kathleen Dowling Singh, who was actually a Buddhist palliative care chaplain somewhere in the U.S., I think in Oklahoma, but I could be wrong. But Kathleen Dowling Singh wrote a couple of very excellent books. One was called The Grace in Aging, and the other was The Grace in Dying. So she and Ron started this conversation, and they were looking for models to kind of base the kind of anthropology of aging and kind of flesh out this program. And the only one that they could come across that was even a close fit was this notion of forest dwelling, of the
Hindu.
Ashramas
in
the Hindu
tradition.
So Ron Rollheiser has gone on to develop three stages that kind of parallel the forest dwelling. So there is a more Canadian or North American context.
Can you remind our listeners who Ron is?
So Ron Rollheiser is a Roman Catholic priest and was for about 20 years was president of the Oblate School of Theology.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a Roman Catholic University that's run by a religious order called the Missionary Oblates of Mary Immaculate. So that's where the term Oblate comes from. And so Ron is a published writer and writes in 76 Catholic public, I think more than that now,
yeah. Wow.
Worldwide publications, and is translated into many languages. So he's a much beloved character, and I think one of the most interesting Christian writers of our age. Mm-hmm. He and Richard Rohr, I think, are two really interesting writers.
Yeah.
Well, what you've been describing makes it sound like this whole spirituality of aging aspect is very broad-based, because you draw on a lot of resources, and it's sort of a cross-cultural matter. It's not something that's just confined to, say, North American Western issues and so on. I don't know if you want to say anything more about that.
Yeah, I think it is. I think it is very broad. I think it's the human condition. And and interestingly, on the Forest Dwelling Program, we did have participants from Australia and New Zealand and Jordan, I think. It kind of spoke to a kind of a wide swath of people from different cultures and places. But I think it is part of the universal nature of being human. Mm-hmm.
So, Nancy, I'm curious, because you are doing this, you developed and are running this program, and I'm wondering, where would you put yourself in this four tasks or four pieces of aging part?
Okay.
So where, how do you... If you step back,
do you take a piece of it,
if you step back and think about, okay, where am I in my development? Where is that? Like, I that's a question mm-hmm. I ask myself all the time. Okay, where am I? Like, what?
Yeah.
What is the?
And it's interesting when you're leading the program, you have to have done some of your own work.
Absolutely.
You have to have done your own processing before you can pass it on to others. So I. And perhaps for me, running the program is part of being a blessing elder.
Yeah,
you know, of sharing that with others and feeling passionate enough about it to want to share it with others. I've done some of my work in terms of preparing for the end stage of life, but I kind of, you know, occasionally remind myself that there's a few pieces that I haven't dealt with yet. We have a binder called "What If I Got Hit by a Bus."
Perfect. I love that.
Putting details in there. But I'm also aware in the last while that that there are stories that I haven't written down yet. Mm-hmm. And that's really important work to do. So you tell everybody else to do the work, but you know, mm-hmm. you haven't always done all of it yourself. And I think that's an area where I need to spend some time in the next while. I need to be writing down some of the stories of our lives so that gets passed on. And I've also done some work with ancestry, you know, and looking up my ancestors and finding the stories from the past. And I really want to put that on paper so that gets passed on, it gets continued. So our kids know about that.
Right.
Yeah. So I think you go through those four kind of phases. Over and over again, you know, and you just keep on going through them at deeper and deeper levels.
I can see that.
Yeah.
I can see that.
Yeah, as Nancy was talking, I was thinking the same thing. Okay, where am I at, right? And who am I? I should be doing that work, but I'm not, because I'm going to work still half the time, you know?
Yeah, like, exactly.
And so I can't decide which side of that, who am I, am I really... The only place where I've really done some work, I would say, is blessing. And some of that is because I have grandchildren. And I have spent, I am so blessed to be able to have all three of them here, have conversations with them. They're teenagers and young adults, you know, so you can get to know them and you can tell them the stories. The place where I am so stuck is on this meditation, contemplative practice.
Too.
I feel like, because I'm in the business of spirituality in some ways, because I'm a minister, I get all of that, right? Mm-hmm. And there are sometimes when I'm sitting in a service and I'm leading a service, I'll say to myself, that's a good line in the liturgy here today to sort of hit my head and, you know, but I don't have a consistent practice in that area. I need some work in that area, I'm sure.
And I think it's not easy to develop a meditation practice unless you have some instruction or a guide or a spiritual director that can work with you. And because we're so geared to, doing it right and being good at it. We go to university, we learn so we can do it right and get good at it. And meditation is just entirely antithetical to those to those approaches. So it requires a whole different rejigging of your brain in order to kind of engage in meditation. That's why it's good as we age, because we have to let go of the fact that we, you know, that we can learn and we can do it right.
Oh, I still want to do it right.
There's no right way to age or to die. I mean,
or meditate.
Or meditate. And, I've known people who have meditated for years and years and years and used one particular practice. And they've read everything there is to read on it, and they're good at it. I mean, they teach it, and they're, and then they go off on a retreat and for a whole week are just like, they have what we call monkey mind. So their mind is just jumping all over the place instead of being quiet and peaceful. So
that's what I get.
That's my mind.
That is mine too.
It's
mine
not
too.
Ever about becoming good at it. It's about engaging and then being compassionate with yourself as you kind of grapple with, did I actually meditate or did I just think the whole time?
when I was trying to meditate, I would find myself all of a sudden getting up and doing something in the kitchen in the middle of it, or knitting. Yeah. And I'm thinking, wait a minute, I'm supposed to be doing it, quiet in the moment and just let your mind just follow the thoughts and let them go. Then I'm jumping up again, I can't stay stay there. Yeah. My mind won't let me stay there. So I have always enjoyed doing, I used to do these dances that were called Gurdjieff dances, where you'd have your arms would be in one time, like three-quarter time, and your feet would be in four-four time. So your feet would have four steps to your arm three.
Oh, wow.
And you would have to completely, but it worked for me, because have to completely let your mind go and not think about it. You just have to let your body take over, and you are completely and totally in the moment. And that worked for me, and it would be good, I think, to try to find another place to do that, because that was something that worked.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, and I think that kind of arises out of the working with the Enneagram.
Exactly.
And the Enneagram can be, that's another valuable tool as we age to kind of come to terms with, okay, what's my kind of normative way of approaching things? And once you become aware of it, then you can make the choice to shift out of it. We've done a lot of work with dreams as well.
Oh, interesting.
We unfortunately our dreams professor is retiring, but we'll have to find another one. But dreams are part of, they kind of arise from our subconscious mind. So we can't generate our dreams and say, okay, I'm going to dream this and this and this, and that's my dream. It's a part we don't have control over, and so if we pay attention to that, it kind of helps us come to terms with what we call the shadow self, the part of ourself that we've created over our lives to kind of be our persona or what we present to the rest of the world. But it's not necessarily entirely our whole self and our true self. It's the self that we've put on to be productive and acceptable. And so as we age, it can be helpful to kind of find ways of getting back to what our true self was. And so paying attention to your dreams in a compassionate way is another way of doing that. So there's lots of different ways you can approach it. And I don't know if I'd be able to do Gurdjieff dances, but I admire you for doing it.
It was the meditative practice that seemed to work for me. It was a very much a meditative practice. And we had an amazing leader and teacher. something to pursue, something to think about. Thank you.
Yeah.
I like that.
I think the other piece I've been thinking about as you're having this conversation, and we've talked as a group that we're going to talk about death and dying. And part of that has been trying to get my head around that, right? Because I think I'm the only one at the table here who've written her funeral service.
Oh, good.
So I have done one step, mm-hmm. Written my funeral service and indicated who and who.
I know the music I want.
Yeah, I know the music.
I know the music.
Yeah, and I know who I want in the service and not in the service, which is terrible to say, but But the actual aspects about dying, I think that's something that has to be done, right?
Yeah.
Because you get to a certain stage, and you know your days are numbered,
mm-hmm.
and we know we have limited, it's finite, right? And here we go. Jack and I have talked about this a lot, I think, about the finite days. And it should be done, even though it's finite, mm-hmm. but it's just hard to do, right?
Can you say what you think about when you use the phrase actual aspects of dying?
Well, I think probably should be talking about whether or what aspects of fear of dying are there in my head, mm-hmm. right? Or am I just settled and ready to go? Or, how do I...
Oh, do I make unfinished business.
Right, unfinished mm-hmm. business. Okay. What about how am I going to handle palliative care? Have I made some decisions about a health care directive? Those kinds of things. Have I talked to my kids?
So practical components.
Yeah, mostly practical, I think.
But also existential, it sounds like.
Yeah, but I'm not sure what to do with that yet.
Mm.
What do you do with that? I don't know.
I don't know. Like, have you thought about that, Jack?
Most of my life.
Oh, okay.
One of the reasons is I taught world religions for 30 mm-hmm. years. And one of the practices I did, not so much a practice, but trying to get the students to think about themselves in three regards. Who are you? Where are you going? And why are you here? Those are deep existential questions. And I'm not saying I have the answers to those, because it varies from person to person.
Mm-hmm.
But it grounds you in reality, well, in life. Anyway, so yeah, I've thought about it a lot. I don't worry about it because in terms of the practicalities, because I'm not going to be here, because I don't believe in any kind of afterlife. So I'm Epicurean in that sense, a Stoic. There's no me to control or be anymore. I'm gone.
So it's my problem.
Yeah, so it's the problem of my kids and whoever survives me, which is kind of, I don't mean that callously, because mm-hmm. the whole issue of preparation with we don't use undertaker anymore.
A
funeral director is important, I think.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess I see the service as a way to reflect who I am, where I've come from, right?
Mm-hmm.
What's important to me, and then what's important for my kids to hear, my grandkids to hear, my friends to hear.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Why is
yeah.
a certain song important? To give you an example, there's a hymn in the Evangelical Lutheran hymn book called "You Have Come Down to the Lake Shore." I have had that hymn in both of my, in all of my installations in my positions, my two ordinations as a pastor and a bishop, right? And it's going to be in my funeral service.
Beautiful,
right?
Yeah.
So, you talk about music or whatever, but it has meaning, right? It's been there at significant times. If the hymn had been written in 1975, I probably would have had it at our wedding. So,
it's a thread that's been woven through.
It's a thread, right? And I think people who know me will recognize that in the service.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Hmm. Yeah, this is something, when we do the podcast on death and dying,
mm-hmm.
it would be fun. It would be good to talk about those issues, how we each mm-hmm. perceive that.
It also can be fun, because it's like... like you said, Nancy, it's freeing to talk about it and to sort of get your thoughts together and, I really do want that. Like,
mm-hmm.
yeah,
It's also an aspect of storytelling, which is what Nancy was saying about that whole area of blessing, right? That it's important for us to tell our stories, and we can tell our stories mm-hmm. through our death. We can tell our stories through the preparation for death, through our love. You know, there's a lot of ways to bless others mm-hmm. in our storytelling, right? Mm-hmm.
You know. Two interesting books that I think have really contributed to the conversation on death and dying in recent years. One is Kathleen Dowling Singh's book, The Grace in Dying, which is mm-hmm. an absolutely beautifully written book. Mm-hmm. And the other is David McGinley, who's a Lutheran pastor. Mm-hmm. His book, Early Exits, yes. which just came out in January this past year. So it's a brand new book.
I think you talked about that book, didn't you?
Masterful piece of writing.
Yeah, but both of them really together.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Early Exit, but also the Surviving Cancer is the other one, right? And yeah, so there's The Grace in Dying, and then there's Early Exits.
Early Exits.
Early Exits, right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that's important for us to be sharing resources, right? Into mm-hmm. yeah. because not everybody's in the same place as you are in this program, or that we have been struggling with, you know, in the podcast over the months that we've been doing this, right? Is that we share a bit of that, mm-hmm. A bit of the resources that we know that are out there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And there's lots of good books being written about aging.
And maybe that's it. Thank you, Nancy. Thank you for sharing those, especially those four areas, right, that are important aspects of our aging and the spirituality of aging. And appreciate that you were willing to come and sit with us and to allow us to pick your brain about some of those things, but share some of our stories.
Thank you.
So thank you for that.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me, and thanks for for this opportunity to talk about the program. If you want to know more, www.growingandwisdom.ca.
That's great. I was going to ask you that, so I'm glad I left, because I wanted to make sure, that people know about that. So thanks for listening today. We look forward to hearing your responses to some of the conversations that we've had here. Have a good day. Thanks for spending this time with us on Seniors in the Building. If you enjoyed today's conversation, we'd love for you to follow us. Join our growing community. And keep sharing in the stories, wisdom, laughter, and life as seniors. Until next time, stay curious and seek hope. You can find us under Seniors in the Building on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and possibly wherever you listen to other podcasts. Our email is forseniorsinthebuilding@gmail.com. That's the numeral 4, followed by seniorsinthebuilding, lowercase, all one word. We'd love to hear from you. You can also leave a review wherever you listen to your podcast. We'd like to thank Thomas Waschenfelder for our logo design, and Amy Waschenfelder and collaborator Natasha Franzblow for our musical jingle for the podcast. We really appreciate their input and the support of all of our families in this endeavor, for listening, for reviews, for tech support, and love.